Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello and welcome to the program for March 26, 2024, which in the Hebrew calendar we count as the 16th of the month of Adar 2, 5784. Today I shall talk about the way Israel is used, or rather misused, in the U.S. presidential election campaign, and also how current internal U.S. politics are destroying the fabric of their democratic system and judicial impartiality. But I begin with a report that, contrary to what dominates the news, demonstrates that there is still much goodwill for Israel in the world. In Israel, we are never short of interesting events covering all kinds of subjects. There are talks, meetings, cultural gatherings, and conferences. The most memorable occasion that I attended recently was the chairman's conference of the Israel Allied Foundation under the expert guidance of its president, Josh Reinstein, together with representatives of the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem and the All Nations Convocation. It is an assembly of 53 Christian groups or caucuses from all over the world, of people with influence and a common interest in educating and empowering faith-based legislators who share the belief that the state of Israel has a right to exist in peace with secure borders. Over a period of 3 days, they met at different venues to put forward their ideas how to raise awareness about Israel as a valuable member of the international community, as well as its importance as the home of Judaism and the birthplace of Christianity. They came from places as far apart as Norway and Australia and spoke about the way they deal with anti-Israel and anti-Semitic voices in their countries. This year, 21 parliamentarians from African, Asian, and European countries also took part and reiterated their efforts to stem the dissemination of fake news about Israel. Amidst tumultuous times, the convergence of these distinguished leaders amplifies the commitment to fortify Israel's standing and confront prevailing threats with unwavering resolve, Reinstein said. The importance for Israel of the Foundation's work is underscored by the presence of several members of Knesset at the various meetings. Among them was Sharon Haskell, who called for the disbandment of UNRWA, which is practically an arm of Hamas. This United Nations-funded so-called educational organization has spent $1 billion since just 2021 spreading fake historic accounts and anti-Israel hatred. The meetings were also addressed by Energy Minister Eli Cohen, Diaspora Affairs Minister Amichai Chikli, and during lunch by Foreign Minister Israel Katz, who stressed the importance of resisting foreign pressure for a lasting ceasefire in Gaza until Israel's objectives, as outlined by Prime Minister Netanyahu, to free the hostages and eliminate Hamas, is reached. Katz announced that he is establishing a global forum to combat antisemitism and incitement against the Jewish people and against the State of Israel. According to Katz, this forum will include the society and the government of Israel, as well as world Jewish communities and friends of Israel around the world. On behalf of the government, Intelligence Minister Gila Gamliel accepted the conference resolution condemning in detail the Iran-sponsored terrorism and war crimes against Israel. It was signed by all the parliamentarians. Gamliel's remarks echoed the mood of the country to continue the war until victory is achieved. once and for all, were her words. She compared the intention of today's Iran to exercise hegemony over the Middle East with the Persia we remember at the festival of Purim that dominated 127 countries, but how, like all the Jewish people's enemies, they came to grief. Asked during questions and answers about the government's ultimate plans for Gaza, she evaded giving a definitive answer. During a reception and dinner at the Friends of Zion Museum, member of Knesset Julie Edelstein introduced Rachel Goldberg-Polin, who described vividly how her 23-year-old son Hersh was taken hostage on October the 7th and was still in captivity. It was the most emotional moment of the conference when she related how, while hiding in a bomb shelter that came under terrorist attack, her son's left arm was blown off, and how he made and applied a tourniquet by himself. Videos of Hersh being taken into captivity confirmed her account. Rachel Goldberg's moving account left no dry eye in the room. The conference confirmed that there is unshakable support for Israel in many influential quarters around the world. In any country, a pre-election period is always a time of increased internal political debate. But the United States is tearing itself apart by being preoccupied with the events surrounding former President Donald Trump. Instead of dealing with the multitude of its internal problems, the Democrat administration has chosen the plight of the civilian population in Gaza as one of the pillars of their populist election campaign. They also berated Israel for its defensive action against the terrorist gangsters of Hamas who started the war. You may recall the occasion when Biden not only used unacceptable vocabulary to describe Putin in connection with his Ukrainian attack, but even more serious was his speech on the 26th of March 2022 in Warsaw, Poland, when referring to Putin, he said, "For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power." The White House immediately strongly downplayed Biden's remarks with the statement, "The president's point was that Putin cannot be allowed to exercise power over his neighbors or the region." Yet there was not a whisper from the Biden administration when one of the most senior Democrat legislators, Jack Schumer, the leader of the Senate, from his podium called for elections in Israel, a most undiplomatic, unacceptable, and inflammatory remark, interfering in the internal affairs of an allied state. Biden also referred to Netanyahu, the U.S. most important ally in the Middle East, as an obstacle to peace, instead of Hamas, who are holding 134 Israeli hostages. It seems that President Biden, who called this a good speech, has lost his political acumen. Jack Schumer's opposite number in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, said, "The Democrats don't have a Bibi problem, they have an Israel problem." You know, Mr. Schumer, there is a legitimate way for you to be able to try and change Israel's prime minister. Make Aliyah and vote. Our prime minister has repeatedly stressed that we must continue the war until all of Hamas in Gaza is eliminated. He is constrained by diplomatic protocol to tell Biden what would be embarrassing for him to hear, so I will say it instead. To follow your recipe, Mr. President, would lead to the same disaster that you brought over Afghanistan by pulling out your troops against the advice of your military and allow the Taliban to again establish there an Islamic dictatorship. You sacrificed the lives of your soldiers in vain. We shall not make the same mistake, Mr. President. It would allow the remaining Hamas battalions in Gaza to regroup, rearm, and again regain power. Have you heard the words of the Hamas spokesman who said, "We shall repeat October the 7th again and again and again"? The same demonstrators that complain of genocide in Gaza are shouting, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," advocating what? A genocide of Jews, Mr. President. I know it's hard to remember it all. Anything goes in an election campaign. The Democrats, in their effort to harvest votes, are abandoning their moral compass by apparently conflating humanitarianism and terrorism. Moved by the condition of large parts of the population in Gaza, they have committed to effectively building a harbor for Hamas, who still exercise a considerable amount of control over the distribution of aid. You might as well send it in the conventional way, by trucks. And while I'm on this subject, I will tell you that before October the 7th, on the road leading to the commercial vehicle crossing into Gaza at Kerem Shalom, there was an almost continuous line of fully laden aid trucks lining up to enter. I observed the process of checking and transferring the loads to Arab trucks that took it across. The other side was controlled by their administration, which was Hamas. No further comment needed except to say that Hamas and their affiliates looked after themselves extremely well at the cost of the rest of the population. Today's food shortage is the inevitable result of war started by Hamas. It's interesting that US Vice President Kamala Harris, whose brief is to deal with the borders of her country, but did nothing, has suddenly sprung into life and is dealing with Israel's borders instead. This incapable wannabe has the gall to warn Israel of consequences if we defend ourselves against your apparent new ally, the Hamas terrorists. Kamala, you will suffer the fate of all our nation's enemies, oblivion. Who dares to tell President Biden that he suffers from a form of cognitive impairment? Perhaps he discusses it with his doctor, but the person closest to him and who knows him best is his wife Jill. Her task is to protect and advise her husband, whose condition she is fully aware of when she often has to guide him off the stage. But instead of campaigning for his re-election, she should call a halt to this circus before the ridicule of her husband becomes too widespread. It is, of course, possible that she herself likes the title of First Lady and the privileges that go with it. On the other hand, the Biden family's allegedly corrupt businesses should keep her in the style to which she is accustomed. Israel National News just reported that Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, suggested to move the people from Rafah into an area of the Negev to allow the IDF to complete its military activities against Hamas. Is this man totally insane? To bring 1.2 million Arabs into Israel, among them, no doubt, quite a lot of terrorists who'll probably find a way to enter the center of the country. And Kushner has political aspirations under a Trump administration. Laughable. Finally, for much of human history, kings, that's male monarchs, wielded most of civilization's power. The early kingdoms started around 3000 before the Common Era. And one of the first civilizations to use the kingship system was Egypt. Early kingdoms were formed because of triumph in wars, which led to more powerful individuals exerting authority over the perceived weaker ones. In Judaism, we had the well-known kings of Israel and Judah, like Shaul, David, Solomon, Jeroboam, and many more. The earliest attained their position by great distinction in battle. Subsequently, there was also hereditary succession by bloodline. Japanese royalty is believed to trace the world's longest hereditary bloodline. They claim to trace their lineage back to 600 before the Common Era. Under the feudal system of medieval Europe, a few powerful landowners gained large territories mainly by military force. The mightiest of these landowners was crowned king. The British tried to trace the royal bloodline to Alfred the Great, King of Wessex, in the 9th century, but that's pushing it a bit. Another of several theories is William the Conqueror in 1066. They had a very checkered history to this day. Henry VIII, for instance, had 6 wives, 2 of which he beheaded for infidelity, although he was known to have several mistresses, and 2 marriages were annulled by the church. During my lifetime, the British royal family did not fare much better. Divorces, questionable death, and marriages with so-called commoners are, excuse the pun, commonplace. There is much debate among their subjects, as all holders of British passports are referred to, about the cost to the taxpayer to keep the royal apparatus, or the firm, as they call themselves, in their luxurious lifestyle, quite apart from the several royal palaces that were obtained over the centuries by questionable means. It was only the dignity and decorum of the late Queen Elizabeth II that kept a veneer of respectability and royalty. I believe that Charles and his divorcee foreign wife herald the end of the British hereditary royalty. As a British subject, I allow myself to question whether this is applicable in the 21st century. Notwithstanding my opinions, I wish the Sikh members of the royal family a speedy recovery to full health. And with that, I end for today. Until the next time, this is Walter Bingham, hoping for the end of hostilities, the return of the hostages, and full and complete recovery of our wounded security personnel. Living through yet another war is particularly hard for the elderly. Please bring some joy into their life by making time to visit them. Thank you. Goodbye.
Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.